For those of you who continue to think that personal finance isn't political, I'm rolling my eyes at you virtually. Since the beginning of my time in the personal finance space, I've written articles on and off about that intersection between social justice and money. This year, you've seen a lot more content from me related to this because, in my view, we're in a pivotal moment in history where we're having a lot of conversations spanning equality, financial allies, access, policy, and more. When Ice Cube was outed that he was working with the current administration on developing a financial plan for African Americans, I'll admit I was a bit shooketh. You mean the fuck the police guy, Ice Cube, that guy is working with the current administration? It just didn't compute. There are a number of reasons why. There are a number of problematic issues with his collaboration with this current administration. And I thought I would share my point of view on why Ice Cube now reminds me of the bad ice from whichever place it is that you go to that never cleans its ice machine. In this episode, I will share why Ice Cube working with the president was a huge misstep and what I would have advised him to do instead. You might be surprised. As an adult and also as an entrepreneur is that there are some tables that you don't need a seat at. Let me repeat that. There are some tables that you do not be sitting at. There have been moments throughout my life when I would be presented with an opportunity to be at that metaphorical table of someone who maybe I noticed was a little suspect in the past, but maybe they're at a point in their career or in their life where I'm like, well, I can kind of ignore that suspect behavior or whatever issue it is that I had with this person. Basically, they had access to something that perhaps I wanted, like more fame or a bigger community or whatever it is, more access. However, there was that little thought in the back of my head, like, maybe this person's a little sketchy or shady, or there's an issue. And I voice this issue either in my journal to a friend or whatever, and then I ignore it. And I kind of feel like this is part of the issue with this collaboration. Every time I've ignored a feeling like that, it never ended well for me. And I always ended up looking like a chump. And this is definitely the case for Ice Cube, Kanye, and other people who've forever hitched their brands with this current administration's. And I should say, as I go further into this episode, I think you might be surprised by some of my suggestions on what they could have done to change that outcome for them. Right now would have been an incredible moment, to be honest, to create our own table focused solely on African-American financial empowerment, our own table, a nonpartisan community of Black, Brown, and ally leaders working towards uplifting the community. Why nonpartisan? Because bipartisan projects immediately change how we perceive a project such as this one. And by being nonpartisan, participants are forced to have deeper and more nuanced conversations in order to move forward. Basically, they would have to reach a consensus, right? Kind of like how the government's supposed to work, but that's another conversation. But if you're working with a nonpartisan group of people and are privately funded, it just changes what you can do and who you can work with. When you work with government, immediately your hands are tied in a lot of ways, and you're connected with whichever administration is currently in the White House. Good or bad, depending on your own politics. By being nonpartisan, it really changes what you can do and how you can position what you're looking for, what you're seeking. And let's be clear, the president isn't the only person that Ice Cube could have worked with on this project. In fact, working with a person who is quick to promise but may or may not deliver is quite honestly not a long-term business strategy. Me and a lot of other people are waiting for Mexico to pay for that wall. Here are some of the people that I would have suggested he work with, and there are some people who I'm going to suggest with politics that I don't love. But the honest truth is, they may have a strength or an insight into something that perhaps Ice Cube does not. And this is why I'm suggesting them. So this is not even a comprehensive list, but it's a good list. So here are some of the people I would have suggested he work with before ever going to speak with the president. Again, building his own table. Melody Hobson, president and CEO of Ariel Investments. Magic Johnson, incredible as a businessman. And one of the key factors of his business is investing in communities that big business typically ignored and being profitable. Those are a lot of Black and brown communities where big business ignored us. And Magic Johnson was like, we spend money. We like things. And so he would be on my team. Tiffany, the Budgetista Aliche, who is the founder of the largest community serving Black women in the financial space. It makes no sense to talk money if you don't have her at the table. Bill and Melinda Gates, you know who they are. The Walmart family. Again, I don't like Walmart, but they do know what they're doing, and they actually have interesting politics. And so they tend to be leaning a little more moderate these days, but they have foundations specific to policy, as you would if you ran one of the largest or the largest business in the world. Stacey Abrams, who is focusing on voting rights, which clearly is an issue. Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who's a progressive politician. Alexis Ohanian of Reddit, who also is Serena Williams' husband. But he is an interesting person because he's been on a board. And part of what I think people need to understand is how boards work for major companies. Typically, they have fiduciary responsibility as well as the money responsibility, as well as the responsibility of overseeing the work that the company does. So it's a pretty significant role in how a company is run. And so he would be a really interesting person because he actually made the point that on the Reddit board, he needed to step away. I think it was good timing for him personally as well. But he also gave his seat up so that a person of color could have a seat on that board. And I think his insight in growing a tech company is super important, and understanding the algorithms behind how people behave the way that they do is also important. Katie Porter, who is a politician out of California. Katie Porter is a badass. She's amazing. She's amazing. She's amazing. As an advocate for citizens, she's amazing. Byron Allen, who has been purchasing media companies, specifically visual media. He's a person of color, he's a Black man, and he's so interesting. Robert Johnson, who right now I'm really mad at. However, he is the richest African-American, and I'm mad at him because he evaded his taxes. That's not ever a good idea. And he was just fined $140 million, but he has $140 million because he's a billionaire. Pretty sure he wasn't working with Trump's tax lawyers, but we're not going to get into that. My point is, regardless of how I feel, this man is brilliant. He has grown a billion-dollar business, and he does know what he's doing. He needs to work on his ethics. That's all I'm going to say. Michael Steele, former head of the RNC. Did you know that a Black guy was the head of the RNC? I think a lot of people would be shocked by that in 2020, but this is the case. Andrew Yang, universal basic income. I will also talk about this further in the conversation. Bernie Sanders, you know who he is. Colin Kaepernick, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Tim Scott, who's currently a senator. I do not really like any of his politics whatsoever. I do think that he should be a part of this conversation. John Hickenlooper, who was previously the governor of Colorado. He actually ran our state so that it was the number one economy in the U.S. for many years. He also was part of bringing a really interesting program to Colorado that helped lower teen pregnancies by 46%. You don't see young girls in Colorado pregnant. It's very unusual. Like, you just really don't see it. So they were able to receive free birth control. I think it was Depo or whatever they opted for. And so that was a 5-year program. I'm not sure if it's still happening, but lowered the teen birth rate by 46%, and also was the governor in charge of Colorado when we implemented for the first year our 100% vote by mail system, which has been wonderful for our voting right. And again, I'm going to talk about voting further on. Rihanna, she is on pace to becoming a billionaire. She understands business and she understands people as well as employing people. Ariane Hamilton, founder of Backstage Capital, which is a venture capital fund, I think specifically focused in the technology space. You see her quite a bit, but she is a person of color, Black woman, that needs to be at this kind of table. Individuals in the healthcare space looking to create better health outcomes for people of color, as well as just poor people, in addition to just Americans in general. U.S. governors of states with high Black and brown populations. So it makes no sense to try to do policy changes without thinking about the way that it really works. And in my view, working with governors might be a lot more, project like this might experience more results working with a governor versus working with a president. Because the president has a lot of people that they're beholden to, whether they're a Democrat, Republican, independent, what have you. So that's just something to think about. Secretaries of state. So I'm hoping that most people know, that the Secretary of State almost always is in charge of elections. So who runs locally for your Secretary of State position is a huge deal. This is why Georgia's election with Stacey Abrams and the guy that she ran against was so hotly contested, because they had seen that there were problems with voter suppression in the state of Georgia. So working with secretaries of state in order to make sure that people can vote, that's something that just is a no-brainer for something like this. And then finally, just basically focusing on making change at the state level. So working down up versus top down. This is a big list, but I share this list to say that there are a ton of people that Ice Cube could have collaborated with on this project. Also, I shared a mix of people because in the real world, we work with all types of people. Really, in the real world, we just do. You can't just do what's happening now in politics, because sooner or later, people get angry, which is what we're seeing, because you have to govern from the majority versus the minority. That's just how it happens. Like, it just doesn't, it's not working, which is why there's so much anger rolling back. Okay, here are several factors that Ice Cube didn't think about when sharing this project. First of all, he was outed by the administration at a time that was best for them, and that didn't look good for him. Optics matter. It matters that this project was actually kicked off during the election season. How does working with Ice Cube benefit either candidate? So my point is, if Biden was working with him, how did it benefit Biden to be working with Ice Cube? And likewise, how does it benefit Trump? In my view, this is where Ice Cube kind of gave away his power. This is, again, why I believe a project like this, an initiative like this, has to be nonpartisan, because you have to be careful, especially as a person of color, a Black man, a Black woman, whatever, a woman, even as a white woman, whomever, you have to think about how, or just a human, actually, think about how what you're bringing to the table can be used in a way that is not advantageous for you. So as an entrepreneur, I think about that all the time. I actually had a conversation with a friend. I wrote a post. I'm doing some fun freelancing projects in the outdoor space because I run my Square State project about Colorado. And I did a write-up on my friend. And I reached out. I was like, hey, the website is looking for your photo. where I mention you as a leader in the outdoor space here in Colorado. And she reacted very differently than I thought she would, but I'm glad she did it in that way because it made me think. She goes, what do you mean? Like as in a stock photo? And I was like, no, like what? Because in the outdoor space, that would actually be a common thing. So I don't think she's used to being highlighted as a leader. And so it caught me off guard because I'm used to being highlighted in certain ways in the personal finance space. So I'm happy to share my image. But in the outdoor space where it's very difficult to find images of Black women and other people of color in that space, you gotta watch out. And so I'm really glad that she reacted that way because I never would have thought about it from that perspective. So again, optics matter, and how does working with you benefit other people? And does it benefit you? The Biden team, interestingly, said that they wanted to wait until after the election. I can't speculate why. What I would say is that I don't believe that delay necessarily was indicative of a lack of interest in a project such as this one, but a nod to the fact that a conversation, a project such as this, needs a lot more time to kind of work through instead of a rushed yes in between campaign events. But I will say that optics do matter. And by Biden's team making this choice, it can look like they weren't interested, which I don't necessarily think is the case. You don't put a Black woman on the ticket if you're not interested in this. I think it was a team decision. They want to focus on what they're doing, which is trying to win the election. Likewise, the president, in my view, should focus on trying to win the... I gagged when I said that, but I'm trying to be fair. If he were smart, he wouldn't try to be doing all these different things. Like, they're trying to win an election. So going into these collaborations and saying yes to stuff now may not serve them well later on when people are like, we need you to come through with that yes that you gave us. Know your audience. If Ice Cube was really serious about this, then he should have taken into account that literally 97% of Black women cannot stand this president. We can't stand him. We didn't like him before, and we really can't stand him now. And that's partly because we've seen him treat Black women really badly throughout the years, consistently, just with a lack of respect over and over again. And so actually, it cracks me up that the last moderator for the final debate is Kristen Welker, who's a woman of color. I think it's hilarious. And I'm wondering if the president's going to be able to hold back his disdain of Black women because he really can't stand us. So it's going to be interesting how that works for him, but we'll see. He doesn't have a lot of self-control. My point is, if Ice Cube knew that 97% of Black women were like, we can't stand him, this whole thing is suspect to us, it would have kind of changed his positioning if we were his target, if we were his target audience. I think it would have been a lot more transparent to say, I am targeting Black men who find this president appealing for whatever reason, because personally, I don't understand it. But there is a small percentage of Black men who like this president. Again, I literally cannot understand why. He could have just been like, I'm targeting you. And that would have been a lot more genuine and consistent with this whole scenario. And then finally, timing. Just like optics, timing is everything. African Americans have been struggling financially my entire life, my mother's life, my grandmother's life. How is it that the last 3 weeks before the most important election in American history, literally since 1908, they are saying this is the most pivotal election since 1908 in America? Why is it that this project is conveniently shared right before the election to sway our vote? Again, showing that it's a partisan-focused project versus nonpartisan. And I want to keep talking about that nonpartisan piece because honestly, not all Black people are Democrats. Not all Black people want to be Democrats. And that is something that is a very real conversation that I'll talk about further into this show. Don't get me wrong, now is the time to have this conversation about African-American money. We can't allow ourselves to be used by either party when we need to be clear about what serves us best. $500 million is chump change, or you could call it Trump change. In fact, recently, BET co-founder Bob Johnson noted that reparations for slavery could factor around $14 trillion. In order to truly change African-American financial prospects in this country, in my view, the following has to happen. And this is not even everything I'm sure that other people would list, but these are some of the things that came to mind for me as I prepared for the show. Pay equity and pay transparency. People are constantly being underpaid because they have no idea what other people are starting at. And again, $500 million versus $14 trillion. So that was the other thing. I'm like, Ice Cube, $500 million isn't nothing. Are you serious? That's the amount your friend owes. He owes more. Donald Trump, as an individual human being, owes almost $1 billion to whomever. I don't even know. But Ice Cube is like, wow, for 40 million people, $500 million is great. Are you serious? That's not enough money. Don't get me started. Affordable education. Going to college and leaving college in a financial hole makes no sense. I lived in France and attended the Sorbonne for a semester. So if you watch Emily in France, that literally was like my life, but I was going to French classes and that was it, not working. Technically. And I did that for a semester and paid $4,000 for 6 months in France, including travel fund and a college education overseas. So the fact that Americans are in the US paying $14,000, $25,000, whatever it is, a year for an education that makes no sense. That makes no damn sense. We are paying too much for some things and our wages aren't in line with that. So keeping up with that cost of living increase. It makes no sense. Affordable healthcare, embracing transparency in pricing. So I love, and I'm being sarcastic, how people always mention Venezuela and socialism. And I'm like, I lived in France and that's the kind of socialism we're kind of talking about. Like France, Canada, Australia, Swedish countries. Like there are a lot of ways to do a thing and not everyone wants Venezuela. In fact, most of us, none of us want Venezuela. And it is my view, actually, that if we have another 4 years of this administration, we're going to have Venezuela. But that's another conversation. My point is this. We need transparency in pricing and availability and access to healthcare that's affordable. Taiwan is another example of a way that citizens have affordable access to healthcare that's a no-brainer. I get that we have a lot of people here, but the way that we're doing things is not working. It's not working. You shouldn't lose your home because you get sick. That makes no sense. So there is more than one way to do a thing. I'm sick of the Venezuelan talking point. It's because not enough people have traveled, to be honest. And so that's the one easy place that they always mention. But there are a lot of ways to do healthcare. And honestly, we don't need to do anything with Venezuela as an example. End voter suppression. Have you ever really sat down and considered how much money is spent to keep people from voting? Facebook ads with bots posing as people of color, television spots, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube marketing. The lesson learned is from this should be that your vote matters because votes are being obstructed. No substantial bills are getting passed. So none of the things that you're hoping will happen is happening. Everything's getting blocked. So if you're like, well, nothing's moving forward, it's because things get blocked. And if you don't vote, Shaquille O'Neal, 48 years old, hasn't voted. This is for, and I'm proud of him because this is his first time voting. But my point is, part of what's really frustrating about votes and people not voting is they're not making the connection that people pay a lot of money to keep them from doing it. I have been voting since I was 17 freaking years old, okay? 17. And I keep a file. I vote in one of the easiest places in the United States or the world to vote. I still keep a file and check up on that all the time because I know people do not want me to do it. So I understand how powerful my vote is because of that. I vote in every single election. I do, not just presidential. And quite honestly, if you're not voting all the time, that's part of the reason why you get people like that dude in Georgia, the Secretary of State, who like is making it hard for you guys to vote and you're standing in lines for 11 hours. Like that makes no sense. I'm doing a whole nother episode about the voting lines. Ice Cube could work with secretaries of state to empower voters of color and pass so that policies could be passed that would actually help us, such as universal mail-in voting that's occurring in states like Colorado, Oregon, California to a certain degree. Like basically the whole Western U.S. basically votes this way. And Republicans, if you're worried, they get elected. We get some crazy ass Republicans who get elected, in my view. And why? Because access is easy for everyone. Ugh. Subsidized childcare. One of the things that is so sad about COVID is women are dropping out of the workforce because we can't afford childcare. So for me, subsidized childcare is a huge deal. Universal preschool. Did you know that in France, they have had what's called École maternelle since 1830. 1830, they have made sure that their kids, their little kids, start off right, whether you're rich or poor. And America refuses to pay for universal preschool. Venture capital access to nurture businesses in the tech fields. A standardized system for paid maternity and paternity leave. By the way, all of these things I'm suggesting don't exist in a tunnel. Like they're for everyone. They're not just for Black people. They're for all American citizens. So it's like these types of policies benefit everyone. And because a lot of us haven't lived overseas, like actually lived overseas to see how these work out and how they help other people, I think that's part of the reason why people are really afraid of these types of policies. They don't get it. I've lived abroad. These are great policies. People are freaking happy in other places. If people were happy here, we wouldn't have protests since June. Every day is since June. It is almost November and people have been fighting since June. Help growing technology-based businesses versus service-based businesses in the Black community. So one of the huge issues that killed 40% of African-American businesses during COVID is the types of businesses we open. We've been doing a lot of service-based businesses where we're physically there doing the service, like hair care, that kind of thing. And we need to start growing technology-based businesses in addition to service-based businesses, because it's 2020. We'll always need to get our hair done and we'll always need a person to do that. But I want venture capital available for people so that they can do other things as well. A massive public works project. Employ Americans repairing our roads, installing additional infrastructure both in underserved communities and updating things that need to be updated. Right now in Denver is really interesting. We are getting our pipes, like our water pipes, changed, and the city is covering the cost. And basically, it's pipes that have, I think, lead in them. So basically in April, in the neighborhoods that were affected, we received water pitchers to filter the water. I received one. And they have been systematically going through the different neighborhoods and changing it for free for us if we said yes. It's awesome. So we can employ people to do that. We need people working on infrastructure such as high-speed internet to rural communities as well as underserved communities, repairing roads, bridges. Bridges are a huge, huge, huge problem because there are so many that are not in good shape. In fact, a couple of years ago, one just collapsed and killed a whole bunch of people. So we need to work on that. And it's been like 80 years since there's been a massive public works project. And you know when that was? During the Depression. So we need to do another one. And actually, that Works Progress Administration during the Depression, they were the ones who created all the libraries and all these different beautiful buildings and parks and things like that. So that's the type of public works project that we can employ people to do. Sidewalks, adding sidewalks to cities. So Denver has a lot of sidewalks, but they're always adding sidewalks and making sure that there's wheelchair accessibility. It's like always happening, always. And so in my neighborhood, I've seen it cleaned up and updated several times in the last 10 years that I've lived here. Parks, recreation centers, expanded transportation. Basically, America is one of the wealthiest countries in the world and our infrastructure is crumbling. It's embarrassing. We should be funding the Birthright Africa program, making it accessible for adults and youth. Or rather, I should flip it and say youth and adults. I think part of why our view is so narrow as Americans in general is we don't travel. We don't see how it could be elsewhere. And we just accept that this is the way it can be, how life is. I've traveled quite extensively and it's so frustrating for me because I'm like, you guys, there are other ways to do a thing. And even short trips abroad can be very transformative in a way that you could never even believe. And the Birthright Africa program is similar to the Birthright Israel program. And it basically funds trips for Black people to go back to Africa and experience it. How cool is that? But in my view, adults need that trip too. And so there are some adults who just won't be able to afford it. And that's why I'm saying that we should fund that program, not only just for youth, but also for adults. Fund short-term programs for overseas travel for POC and other low-income citizens. Traveling around the world has changed my life. Traveling around my world has changed my life and expanded my worldview. And this is why I believe some of the things that I do. It's not just because I randomly think these things. It's because I've seen a lot of these policies put in place in other countries. It's not abstract. I've lived in other countries, so it's not abstract. Funding universal basic income. So for 8 years, I've written posts on and off about how technology is changing the way we work and creating job instability. COVID-19 really highlighted this as a concern. I'd never really thought too deeply, to be honest, about universal basic income. I didn't quite get it. And I didn't think too deeply about it until Congress was grappling back and forth with that extra $600 a week, and it pissed me off. And then finally I got it. And I got it because I spoke with people and have spoken with people since they received that money, and it changed their lives. They were able to save money for emergency funds. They were able to pay off debt. Like, they just were able to move the needle in a way that they wouldn't have been able to before because they had the extra discretionary income to do that. And there are some other programs across the United States that have cropped up that are a good precursor of what to expect with universal basic income. By the way, if someone blows the money, that's none of our business. They get to choose what they do, right? And this is part of the reason why I was so frustrated with that conversation about that $600. It's not for you to tell me what I'm going to do with that money. It's without limits. Like, here's the money, you do you. So if you squander it, that's on you. If you choose wisely, great. So here are some programs that I think you should be aware of that are basically universal basic income programs in the US. By the way, these programs are cropping up overseas. Germany recently is looking to implement one as well. So there's the Abundant Birth Project in San Francisco. They basically gave pregnant women $1,000 a month for 2 years from the point in time that they gave birth on. And just that was, you do what you need to do with that money. There's a program in Jackson, Mississippi called the Magnolia Mothers Trust. Similar concept. San Francisco is doing something similar as well. Newly proposed program for artists. Stockton, California did an 18-month privately funded program where they gave a small group of people $500 a month. And it's really interesting because when data has been shared with about these programs, like later, typically people just use it to pay bills and save money and like pay for classes and improve their lives. And it just helped eliminate a level of stress that they've been experiencing, a level of financial stress that they've been experiencing. My point is this: there's a lot of ways to do a thing, and you don't necessarily need to work with the president to do it. The key to universal basic income or any program such as this is you have to say it's for everyone, and I'll tell you why. It's easier to get buy-in. This is easier. So if you say, hey, we're going to do this for everyone who makes up to $300,000 a year. Everyone who makes up to $300,000 a year gets the same amount. It changes the reaction to the program. Because if you're like, well, oh, like I make $300,000, like, and I still get the money, that's awesome. Like, I guess it's not as bad for the poor people too, versus only poor people are getting this or people who are making this amount of money. It changes how people perceive it. So you have to have it available for everyone, which is why Andrew Yang wasn't 100% sold on him, but actually he's right about this. So my question is, if Ice Cube truly cared about the state of Black America, did he take the time to think about all the issues that I just brought up that I thought about randomly sitting on a patio, socially distancing from people while drinking a coffee? And my last question to you is this. The president can't even pay his own bills. How can he help me pay mine? He owes almost $1 billion to persons unknown. I owe less debt than he does. Let that sink in. I've written about paying off debt for 8 years. Okay? As a formerly super indebted person, I've shared that it's really scary owing people that like more money than you can pay back. It's especially scary owing when you don't have enough money coming in. At the end of the day, neither presidential candidate, in my view, really is in the position to say yes to anything because we have no idea what the final outcome will be with this election. We don't know who the president's going to be. So Biden could say yes to this and then maybe he doesn't win. Right? So how can he serve Black people if he's not the president, if he doesn't win, and vice versa? So you shouldn't promise what you can't do. In this time of quick sound bites, I think it's really something we need to think about and something that we've forgotten. It's really easy to say yes to a thing, but it's not always the right yes, or it's not always the right time to say that yes. And that's important. The lesson we should all learn from Ice Cube is that we don't need to sit at every table. The next lesson is build our own tables so that we have more control over how people perceive our intentions. Read the room. It really surprises me how Mr. Fuck the Police got this so wrong. For many people, this collaboration was just so out of the blue, especially given what he said about the president in the past. It just didn't pass the smell test. Here are some numbers that you need to know. 40% of African American businesses have closed due to the COVID response. This is basically a policy related issue. In other countries, they created fiscal policies to avoid this type of financial outcome. And in my state, the big conversation that we're hearing and concern is, hey, 65% of restaurants are not going to survive this within the next 6 months. And we're in a snow state. It's cold today. And even though we will sit outside, like it's not an unusual thing for us to sit on a patio in the winter, businesses can't operate at half capacity. So that means there needs to be a policy or a program in place to help those businesses weather the storm. And that means another round of grants, not even loans, grants, so that they have cash buffers so they can get to March, really. And 6 months from now is March. So how can we help businesses stack some cash between now and March so that they can grow their income and be able to also practice safety for their employees? It's like a horrible decision. It's a horrible situation that they're in. And it's really frustrating when I speak to my friends in other countries and they're not even worried about any of the stuff that we're worried about. They cannot believe what we're dealing with. I just sat there and spoke with a friend from Australia and her husband for an hour last week. And she was just like, what in the hell? And then she explained how people were getting $3,000 a month so that they would be okay. And I thought, we got $1,200 for, like, the more I think about it, the funnier it is. They seriously looked, the United States government looked us in the eye and was like, that P. Diddy and that contestant meme where they're staring at each other back and forth. They looked us straight in the face and were like, flinch. Here's $1,200. Good luck. Welcome to the Hunger Games. Like, it's bullshit. Right? The more I think about it, I can only laugh because it's so ridiculous. 800,000 Americans applied for unemployment in the past week. 11 million jobs have been lost permanently due to the COVID response. And this statistic, you need to let this one sink in because this is unbelievable. One in every 1,000 African Americans has died from COVID-19. I'm going to say that again. One in every 1,000 African Americans has died from COVID-19. You need to spend some time on that statistic to let that really sink in. This is an unbelievable statistic for a country with the wealth that this country has. Unbelievable. And it's a direct reflection of the lack of a cohesive policy. I don't want you to even think about emailing me about comorbidities. Bullshit. Okay? I don't even want to hear it. I don't want to hear the whole, well, we blocked China from coming here. Fuck off. The point of good policy is this: wear a mask, contact tracing. That easy. It's not hard. None of this is political. It should never be political. It's health and people's lives. And as a person of color, I take it personally. I am so angry. I take it personally. And Ice Cube just spat in our faces with this collaboration without thinking. He might have his heart in the right place, but he should have spent some more time thinking and speaking with people who are out there every day doing the work. Okay. I need you to know something about me that might take you by surprise. I have been a longtime independent voter. I felt and honestly continue to feel that the Democratic Party has taken the Black vote for granted. I've always felt this way. Currently, I'm a registered Democrat, and I changed my affiliation when President Obama became president. Ice Cube's concern about our vote being taken for granted are 100% legit. They're 100% something that quite frankly, both parties need to take stock of. Okay. They need to hear what we're saying. We're like, this is an important conversation. But I've also been active politically since I was 17 years old. I started a Black student union, a Black students union group back in the day in my high school. And it was like a big deal, even though our school was 50% Black, you know. And I know that surprises you, right? Yeah, I totally did. I competed actually in a trivia bowl about the Black diaspora with my friends. And we won the trivia bowl and won scholarship money towards college. So I was like, this is not like a new thing for me to care about this. I have always marched. I've always been that low-key activist friend. And it's funny because my mom is not necessarily a person like that. Like, she believes in her vote and whatever, but she's not an activist. She's just trying to live her life. My Square State project, where I uplift and share Colorado local businesses, that's activism. So when the president was talking about, well, you know, let's like buy American, I'm like, bro, I've been ahead of you for years. And I actually buy American by people who manufacture here, unlike yourself, that doesn't manufacture here. So that hypocrisy is problematic for me, just from a business, like from so many levels, but we're talking about money and business in this show. I would love to really ask, how long has Ice Cube been politically active? I'm not saying it's bad if this is a new passion for him. But what I'm saying is that it feels like there were people he could have connected with that he just didn't, because he's not aware of the people he could connect with. Similar to if people got into the personal finance space, and then they just started doing things, and other people would be like, hey, yo, I've been here for 8 years and I might be a good resource for you. You don't have to hear everything I have to say, but I might be able to help you so you don't make certain mistakes or whatever. And so that's just something to think about. Now that the state of Colorado allows independents to participate in every part of the election process, I will change back to independent after the election. I like that they can't figure out how I'm going to vote. I will say Colorado independents typically do vote and lean Democrat, but it depends on who the candidate is, what the policy is. And that's why it's you know, Colorado continues to be an interesting mix of progressive politics in some places, but we won't pass taxes, even the liberals. So it's interesting. However, given what I've just shared with you about my political beliefs, I'm not a freaking fool. I'm not ever going to vote against my best interests. Ever. And this current administration clearly is against my best interests. Like, voting for them would be ridiculous. If Ice Cube is sincere about what he's trying to do, I truly wish he'd worked with more people doing the work before saying yes to a collaboration that, in my view, ultimately will not serve him well. Already it's showing it has not served him well. It's really tarnished how we perceive him. It's just, it's not good. We no longer, like, Kanye was always a little, you know, suspect because people don't like Kim Kardashian. But now it's even worse because we feel like he's suppressing our vote. Seriously. We do need to stop talking and start doing for African Americans and other disenfranchised Americans. And this president's debacle of a presidency has done a fantastic job of highlighting why now is the time to build our own table. Regardless of what your beliefs are, please do vote, create your plan, do it early. I say vote early because we've already seen shenanigans happening across the country. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Looking forward to hearing your thoughts.